Welcome to the Cold Brew Podcast. I'm Dave Gasper, joined by Matt Carroll. You know us as the editors at ReviewingTheBrew.com. Got a lot of great stuff coming up on the podcast today. The Brewers were reportedly involved in talks for Aroldis Chapman before he signed elsewhere in the NL Central. Hall of Fame balloting came to a conclusion this week, and there are several former Brewers coming up on next year's Hall of Fame ballot. Also, we'll talk Ryan Braun and where his place is in Brewers history now, being in the Walk of Fame, and if we'll see him get any other franchise honors coming up. Lots to get into, loaded show. But first, before we get into any of that, we have an actual signing. We have something that actually happened. Matt Arnold awoke from his slumber, and we have a move, and we have the one that we have been waiting for and wanting pretty much the entire offseason. Rhys Hoskins will be a Milwaukee Brewer. This is incredible. It came out earlier this week, late at night. Matt, you were in bed when the news broke on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And it was something that we have been clamoring for. We never really expected it to happen just because, well, we all want it to happen, which means the Brewers probably won't do it and they'll do something else instead. And more often than not, that move will work out better than what we wanted. But the Brewers end up getting this done. 2 years, $34 million for Rhys Hoskins. And he has an opt-out after the first year. So it's essentially a modified pillow contract for Hoskins. If he plays well, he's probably going to opt out, hit the free agent market again next offseason, and seek a longer-term deal with more money. But if he fails, he'll get a second year in Milwaukee. And, you know, maybe if he just wants to stick around, you know, like that'd be nice too. But Matt, Rhys Hoskins is a Brewer, and I think Brewers fans could not be more ecstatic about this. I think this is the best move that they could have made given their situation, and he was a top guy on the market.
Absolutely. Not just at the position. I mean, you look at who was left just period in terms of hitters, and that was one of the best, if not the best guy that was still out there, Rhys Hoskins. I wasn't in bed, technically, by the way. I was sleeping on the couch. I just want to throw that out there.
Oh, little trouble going on over there, sleeping on the couch at night.
And,
oh, man. No. Kicked
okay,
out of
I can
bed.
I see how that can be, taken. No, not like that.
Okay.
I'm also going to take a little bit of a victory lap because, for the first time ever, I finally wrote about someone that the Brewers actually signed. And in fact, the headline was Brewers should address first base by spending extra for free agent Rhys Hoskins. And they did.
Finally. There we go. Take a bow. Finally. This is all on you. All on
yes,
you, Matt Carroll.
Exactly. I mean, you waited 2 months to do it, but you know, you gotta wait for that price to come down the whole million per year based off original projections. But no, this is, I mean, if you're a Brewers fan, you should be absolutely excited about this. Yes, he's coming off of an injury. He was actually at the point where the Phillies were considering bringing him back late last season to pinch hit in the playoffs. So he was borderline healthy there towards the end. They did opted not to ultimately.
They didn't make the World Series. They fell short.
Right.
So.
Exactly. Yeah. Had they done that, we might have seen Rhys Hoskins in 2023. So he should come into 2024 completely healthy, and it gives this Brewers offense the boost that it needed. Because if it went into – we both were of the opinion this entire time that there was no way that this was – that the team pre-Rhys Hoskins was what they were going to go into the season with. Mm-hmm. Like, moves were still to be made. The market – was delayed, like blah, 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 all the stuff we've mentioned for weeks. But had they not made that move, there definitely would have been a ton of concern around that offense because they lost a lot of pieces and essentially never added. Now you've got your guy. Rhys Hoskins is your guy in that lineup. Like, I know Churio's coming. We don't really know what to expect from him in his first year. Should be solid, but Rhys Hoskins is like, that's your run production right there. Based off of his history, like, he hasn't really had a quote-unquote – his worst year, he still had a 111 OPS plus he still had 29 homers that year. Mm-hmm. Like, it basically all of his years have been solid. So there's no downside to this move. And it being on a short contract, you can use that to kind of transition into some of the younger guys potentially eventually at that first base position. So All positives.
Yeah, because you got those young guys coming up, but they're not ready quite yet. You need a stopgap. And I think the Brewers are banking on him using that opt-out and just being gone after one season. But, yeah, in four full non-COVID shortened seasons, he's never had a year with fewer than 27 home runs. So, like, his rookie year, he didn't play the whole season. He came up late in the year, and he still cranked out double-digit homers in, like, 50 games. In the COVID-shortened season, he still had 10 home runs, I think, and still put up really good numbers. So this dude can hit. You know, he will draw walks. He may whiff at a decent clip. He'll be like a 240-ish hitter, but he'll hit decently. He will hit for power. He will get on base. He will draw his walks, and he will be the protection in that lineup. He's probably going to be your cleanup hitter in Milwaukee this season. My lineup projection, I have Jackson Churio hitting the three spots, so Hoskins will be the protection for Churio. I don't know if the Brewers are going to start Churio in that three spot. They may start him a bit lower in the order and have him work his way up, but if Churio turns out to be what everyone's expecting him to be, it will not be long until he's hitting in that three hole in the lineup. So, but you get Hoskins, and now your top four in the starting lineup, Christian Yelich, William Contreras, Jackson Churio, and Rhys Hoskins. That is a damn good top four. Oof. Like this Brewers lineup that we have been lamenting for the past couple of years and throughout this whole offseason, when last year you're looking at Rowdy Tellez as your three guy and Willie Adames, you know, hitting 3-4. To go from Tellez and Adames 3-4 to Churio and Hoskins is a massive improvement in the middle of the order.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we didn't even mention Willie Adames yet. Like, he gets to, you know, maybe be in a little bit lower pressure of a spot at the number five. That could be one where, you know, he's in that top three until Churio's ready, and then you ultimately flip them. I think that's probably long term, you know, how the sequence of events ends up going. But regardless, like, to have a Willie Adames batting five is a nice little luxury to have as well. And Willie Adames, no matter where he bats, is going to he's in a contract year, so he's going to be trying his damnedest to put up numbers this season. So you have a guy like that behind Rhys Hoskins, and if he's producing at a decent rate, Hoskins is essentially protected then in the lineup and could possibly even do more damage. So, you know, it.
And then you protect him with a contact hitter like Sal Frelick after that. And you're in a good spot.
The possibilities with this lineup just went crazy. And it might not even be done yet. I mean, it's technically you could still really upgrade that designated hitter position. You've got some options possibly, you know, on the roster right now that you could plug in there. But if the Brewers went and got someone specifically for that spot, lineup could look even better. Options are starting to dwindle a little bit, but it's just, even without that, like you said, like you talk about your top four and then even your top five mentioning Willie Adames, like this offense got so much more impressive over the course of the last few weeks.
Yeah, and it's fixing that one position, because that position has been the question mark all offseason. You got Jake Bowers, and I think I've made it pretty clear. I was not a big fan of the idea of Jake Bowers being your starting first baseman, but we knew he wouldn't be eventually. They would get someone. But the Brewers really kind of jumped the market here. They got the top guy on the market. The first base position players, they did not really sign much at all this offseason. As we talked about previously on the pod, Rowdy Tellez was the only guy who has signed a major league contract from that first base position this offseason in free agent. So, you know, everyone was still out there. Everyone was still out there. And the Brewers get their guy. They get the top guy in Hoskins. And he's on that two-year deal, but it's essentially a one-year deal. And he comes in, and he immediately solidifies that spot. You're getting some guaranteed power production. They needed more power in the lineup this offseason. and that's what they get with Hoskins. So you add Hoskins to this lineup, you add Churio to this lineup, and this offense is looking a lot better. The offense that was lamented by everybody throughout this past season, how they weren't doing enough, they weren't hitting enough home runs. Now you add two pretty good home run hitters. Again, Churio is not proven at the big league level, but power is one of his big tools. He's got five of them, really, but power is certainly one of them for Churio. So you add those guys in the middle of the lineup, and this whole group is looking a lot better. Third base, I think, is still going to end up being an open competition between Monasterio and Tyler Black. I think they're trying to leave that open for Black. DH, I think you could get someone, but honestly, I think they'd be more comfortable just leaving it open and rotating guys through. Rotating in Yelich and Mitchell and Weimer and Frelick, rotating all those outfield guys in, because all of them are still here. We all thought that one of those outfield prospects was going to be traded. We saw Tyrone Taylor get traded, but we thought for sure they were going to trade one of Weimer or Mitchell or somebody like that to upgrade elsewhere on the roster. And ultimately, I mean, as of right now, as of January 25th, by the way, happy anniversary to Christian Yelich joining the roster. Yes. But as of now, those guys are all still on the roster, and it doesn't really look like the Brewers are going to be moving any of them. Now that you got Hoskins to solidify first base, I think DH, you're going to rotate through that cast of characters to give everyone playing time in the outfield, give everyone their at-bats, and keep everyone as healthy as possible.
Yeah, I definitely think you can get by at DH, and even then, you know, if it doesn't work, you know, you could still make an early season move, as we've seen the Brewers have done that a lot, actually, in recent years. You even go back to, you know, Arcia/Adames happening that one year. You know, they're not afraid to make moves, you know, just a few weeks into the season. So, you know, if they decide that, you know what, we don't have what we need, they can still go out and get someone. I'd still prefer that they do, and then I would feel even a little bit more comfortable with third base being a little bit more of that open competition kind of deal with what you have. I don't know how comfortable I feel about both of those positions kind of being, you know, either rotating guys through it or, you know, staffing them with multiple bodies. Having Hoskins makes it so much easier to do that. Don't get me wrong. It was much, much more of a concern. Both of those positions were much, much more of a concern when first base was also a concern. If they, you know, to your point of the, you know, outfielders, and one of them, we were thinking one of them potentially would still move, I'd almost prefer, if they were still going to do that, that they got back a number two, number three type starter with a few years of control. Something along those lines. Like, honestly, that might actually be what would be in the best interests of the club if you were going to move one of those guys. But if you don't, then kind of also to your point, you now have the guys there to rotate some people through designated hitter. If Christian Yelich were the plan for DH, if they were, I know he wants to play the field, so I just don't see him fully moving to a DH position. But if that were to happen, then you essentially are solved, because you have all of those young outfielders are better than Yelich defensively in the outfield. And not that Yelich is bad, and we've mentioned this in the past, not that Yelich is bad. All of those young outfielders are just that good defensively. Churio, Mitchell, Frelick, and Weimer, they're all fantastic defensive outfielders.
They have much better throwing arms. And that, I feel like, is the main thing that Yelich gets knocked for. Now, his arm did improve this past season. But, yeah, all those outfielders, Mitchell, Weimer especially, Frelick, they have fantastic throwing arms. All of them could play right field with their arm strength. Yelich, not so much. But still, like, defensively, like running routes and running to get to fly balls, Yelich is as good as anybody. We've seen him earn Gold Glove nominations in recent years. And it's like, what? Really? How? His throwing arm is so bad. But it's everything else. It's chasing down fly balls. He's still fast. Christian Yelich is still fast, and he can run him down. But Garrett Mitchell may just be a tiny bit faster, you know? Like, that's just kind of how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if Yelich ended up taking more of those DH opportunities, well then, yeah, maybe I'm a little bit more inclined to agree that it might not be as big a problem as possible. But if they were to find someone, I know Jorge Soler is probably, now that we have Hoskins, probably a little outside of the price range. And outside of that, he's pretty clearly the best DH option out there. I think JD Martinez might still be available, but I'm going to take the 32-year-old over the 36-year-old personally, even though JD Martinez just keeps being awesome. Like, I don't know how he keeps doing it, but, you know, I would take the younger guy. And then after that, the best guy on the market is a reunion with Vogie, which is kind of crazy when you're talking pure designated hitters. So, you know, yeah, you could look at maybe some other guys from other positions. So when it comes down to it, you know, maybe it's largely that there aren't even that many options out there for pure
designated. I mean, you could look at Justin Turner if you wanted to. I mean, we've thrown that around in the past. Turner could play a little bit of third base. But he's kind of become a DH type guy now that he's like 39. You could go there if you wanted to. But yeah, I think with the glut of outfielders that they have, and especially with Yelich, trying to keep him healthy, keeping that back healthy as much as possible, because when his back acts up, that's when his bat all of a sudden just gets bad. It's rough on him when that back goes, and playing the outfield every single day may play a part in that. So the Brewers may want to DH him a bit more this year in order to keep that healthy and keep their best defensive alignment out there in the outfield, because defense, as we know, for the Brewers is quite important. That's what they really build this team around. And, you know, maybe that's the route that they end up wanting to go. Now, they said Yelich is still going to be an outfielder. He's going to see some time at DH. But I think as long as Mitchell and Frelick and Weimer and Churio are all here, we may end up seeing a bit more DH Yelich than outfield Yelich this year. But there's no question about Rhys Hoskins being an excellent move for the Brewers. He'll give you power. He'll give you exactly what this team needs. It's a short-term thing. That's what the Brewers are banking on, I feel like, because if it's just 1 year, that means he had an excellent year, decided to opt out. And here's the thing, too. The Brewers can give him a qualifying offer.
Yep.
Because the Phillies decided not to this past offseason, so he hasn't received one before. So the Brewers, having had him for a full season, if he opts out, they can give him the qualifying offer. And then when he rejects it and signs a long-term deal elsewhere, they will recoup a draft pick towards the end of the first round. And as long as he signs for more than $50 million, I think, which if he gets a long-term deal, he absolutely will. Mm-hmm. So you can get a draft pick for Hoskins. And you're also looking at the final years of Adames and Burns, who they will also give qualifying offers to, who will also reject them. That's three draft picks at the end of the first round, potentially, that the Brewers could be receiving in addition to their original first round pick and their competitive balance round A pick that they will have in 2025. So the Brewers could be looking at five selections in the first 40-ish picks of the 2025 draft. And they could have been looking at that before with Brandon Woodruff, before they had to cut him loose, because Woodruff was heading towards the same thing. He would have been a free agent at the same time. They would have given him a qualifying offer. He would have rejected it and likely would have signed elsewhere. But the Brewers would have gotten a draft pick for it. But now, since they had to non-tender him because he got hurt, they weren't able to get that. So now with Hoskins, you can essentially replace that Woodruff qualifying offer pick with a Hoskins one.
Yep. And just think about that. I mean, not only will the Brewers organization be even more stacked than it already is after that draft, that is a ton of trade assets that you all of a sudden have. First round trade assets, multiple ones. So, yeah, all of this, like, it's understandable that it's, you know, disappointing to see a player walk for nothing. But this is where, you know, you really are talking about they're not walking for nothing. There is still something, some benefit here for losing a Burns, losing an Adamas, losing a Hoskins in the end. And you can still use that to get better as a team, to improve your roster.
It may not be an immediate improvement. You know, we all love the immediate gratification of getting those near MLB prospects or MLB guys currently back, like you saw in the Josh Hader trade. You know, as much as we love seeing guys like that that are closer, that can help out more immediately, those first round picks, they can also be of a big help. It may not be immediately, but a couple years down the road, you could either trade them for something to help out now, or they could be a big part of your next core. When this young core starts, you know, getting closer to arbitration and free agency and seeing them head out, you got to have that next wave coming up behind, because the Brewers are all about building a consistent competitor. And how you do that is by continually having a strong farm system to have these young guys come up and be successful. So that's where having those five picks in the first 40 selections of a loaded draft is going to help you. It's going to help you replenish that farm system, because there's a realistic chance their top seven prospects this year will graduate. If you're already graduating like their top five from last year. So you're going to have a lot of guys coming up here in these 2 years, a lot of your top talent. And what's your farm system going to look like after that? You need to continue to replenish it and continue to keep these young guys coming up and being successful. And this is how you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, this all just goes back to the beginning. Like, there's no negatives in this Hoskins trade. The outside of potentially it was a slightly pricey deal. And so does it, like,
but I mean, $17 million for a guy like Hoskins isn't bad.
No, oh no. The value absolutely matches the
they paid more for Yasmani Grandal.
Right. But even then, like, even with all of that, it's not like the payroll was already stretched by any means. They had money to spend. One could argue that they always have money to spend because they should be putting money into the payroll, but we've gone into that plenty of other
times. That's a conversation for a different day. The Brewers spent for the top first baseman on the market, so let's just be happy with that for right now.
Exactly.
And their payroll now, I believe, is back up to, I believe it's a little bit above where it was last year. Just slightly, maybe a couple million above where it was in 2023. So you're still in a good spot with the payroll. I'm not sure how much more they're going to have in them to spend this offseason, as we're seeing some guys come off the board. I think for the most part, they're done adding to the offense. I still think they need to get another starting pitcher. There aren't too many starters out there. The rest of the market is kind of cratered because teams feel the guys out there are not worth the prices they're asking for. Eventually those prices will drop and we'll see these guys sign. But as for what the Brewers do, I think they got to get one more starter. And then after that, you got maybe a couple of luxuries. If you want to get another bullpen arm, fine. If you want to get another infielder or a DH, just, you're probably not getting any more starting position players on the free agent market. But you can get a starting pitcher. You can maybe get a bullpen arm if you like. And the Brewers were apparently interested in that. They were interested in Aroldis Chapman, per friend of the podcast, Robert Murray. He put out this earlier in the week as well, that the Brewers were heavily involved in Aroldis Chapman's market before he ultimately signed a one-year, $10.5 million contract with the Pittsburgh Pirates. So he goes elsewhere in the NL Central. And Matt, you know, personal feelings about Aroldis Chapman aside, what he is as a pitcher, what we've seen him do, I mean, he throws absolute gas from the left side, left-handed pitcher that just throws gas. That's what he's done for his entire career, throwing 100 miles an hour. And I'm just trying to think of a Brewers bullpen with Aroldis Chapman and Abner Uribe throwing 103 miles an hour. Chapman from the left side, Uribe from the right, Trevor McGill throwing 100 miles an hour. And then you get Devin Williams as the closer. I mean, this would have been a race to the fifth inning, essentially. I mean, you could go McGill in the sixth, Uribe in the seventh, Chapman in the eighth, and then Devin Williams and the airbender in the ninth. And, like, it's just gas, gas, gas coming out of that bullpen. It is – that would have been nuts.
Now, imagine if later in the season the Brewers decided, we're going to throw Mizorowski into the mix too.
Oh, my God.
Like, it
– yeah. It's a race to the fourth inning now.
Basically, at that point, yeah, it would have – it certainly would have been something. There's – I know he has – quote unquote declined a little bit in his latter years, but even a declining Aroldis Chapman still throws freaking gas and still is better than, you know,
a lot of relievers
in the league. He had a 3.72 ERA, a 3.09 combined ERA last season in his age 35 season. So he's still doing just fine. There's the character concerns, obviously, that I think a lot of Brewers fans would not have liked to see him come here. It's why we're a lot happier to see a player like Rhys Hoskins come here, because I've read some really good stuff about him lately and what a just good person he is. So with that, I'm sure there would have been some fans not happy. But holy, like you said, like just imagining him and Uribe at the back end bridging to Devin Williams, that just wouldn't be fair. That would not have been fair.
Yeah, and it's a fun thought, and who knows, maybe the Brewers can get him at the trade deadline, because the Pirates probably won't be in it, and they'll probably be trading Aroldis Chapman at the deadline. And hey, the Pirates have had no issues with trading players to the Brewers in the past at the trade deadline, as we just saw last year with Carlos Santana. They got no issue with it. So maybe that could still end up happening, but the Brewers do seem to be on the lookout for another left-handed reliever. Last year, they were relying solely on Hobie Milner to be that left-handed reliever. And Ethan Small, they don't really seem to want to trust him. And Clayton Andrews, you certainly can't trust him in the big leagues. So I think that they might be looking for that extra left-handed guy. They still haven't really found one this offseason. They brought in a couple of guys, Taylor Clark, Brian Hudson, on the 40-man roster. They are righties, so that doesn't really help them much. But when it comes to the rest of the bullpen, the non-roster invites, you got Rob Zastrzyzny and Jared Koenig that are lefties. Those aren't exactly inspiring options either. Oh, Brian Hudson is a lefty, actually, so pardon me on that. Brian Hudson is left-handed. Mm-hmm. My mistake. So maybe Hudson could be in a good spot to compete for that number two lefty spot behind Hobie Milner. But then again, Hudson only has 8 2/3 innings of MLB experience.
Yeah.
And they didn't exactly go super well in those 8 2/3 innings. So I think they're still on the lookout for another bullpen arm. Maybe they'll find one, maybe they won't, but they'll bring in as many options as they can, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same thing that was happening last year. Hobie Milner, you've got him. He's been very reliable as a left-handed pitcher, and they kind of cycled a bunch of guys through there, and it didn't work, and Chafin didn't work, and just getting that little extra little support for him. We'll see, but it is nice to see that, you know, there are at least some options. They have brought some guys in. We'll see if any of them actually stick. I want to play a little bit of trivia with you, though, right now, real quick, because I was thinking of this the other day. Still on the topic of Chapman. So Chapman has done extremely well against the Brewers in his career. He's at 0.63 ERA. Career against the Brewers in 45 appearances. Now, most of those are early in his career when he pitched for the Reds and the Cubs, but he has largely dominated the Brewers. He has given up one home run, however, in all of that. He has given up one home run to the Brewers. You remember who it was?
Was it Jonathan Lucroy?
It was Jonathan freaking Lucroy.
Yeah, it was a slider. That was like a marathon at bat. Where Lucroy was just battling everything off, looking for the slider, and finally got one down the left field foul pole. Yeah.
Yep. And walked it off. I saw that. I was looking at his line, and I saw that one home run, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure I remember that one. And sure enough, that was it. Good memories.
I remember it too. Thought you were going to stump me there, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I thought you'd have that, but I just wanted to talk about it.
Absolutely. Got to bring up Jonathan Lucroy. I mean, why not? Talk about Brewers legends. No.
Exactly.
Going back down that path. But yeah, so Chapman goes to the Pirates, but the Brewers were interested. And we'll see how they continue to build their bullpen and if they bring in any more guys. But yeah, it's very interesting, and it's a very fun thought having that many 100-mile-an-hour arms in your bullpen. Then Jacob Mizrowski potentially coming up even after that. And, I mean, Thiago Vieira, he throws gas. You got who else in here? Hobie Milner does not throw gas, but you got Pyomps, who throws decently well. I mean, that's Elvis Peguero. I mean, that's it's a talented group out there in that bullpen. So we shall see. All right. So also this week, MLB Hall of Fame announcements. And we got three Hall of Famers joining Jim Leland. Adrian Beltre, first year eligible, no doubter there. Joe Mauer, first year eligible, he makes it. Todd Helton gets elected to the Hall of Fame. And speaking of relievers, Billy Wagner falls just 5 votes shy. Poor guy.
Ooh, come on.
Sad to see.
Yeah.
5 votes. I mean, come on. But like all these other relievers have gotten in, but Billy Wagner hasn't really, really. But anyways, I'm not a Hall of Fame voter, unfortunately. If I were, I would have voted for Billy Wagner. But Gary Sheffield, notorious hated former Brewer, ended up falling short of election in his final year of candidacy. And now his best hope to make it in will be on one of the veterans committees. And the veterans committees have not been kind to those players who were named in the Mitchell report, which Gary Sheffield was, which was something that definitely brought down his candidacy among the baseball writers. But Sheffield was really the only former Brewer on this ballot. But next year, Matt, and you've got this up on the site right now, next year the Brewers are going to have a couple of their former players on the Hall of Fame ballot.
Yep, exactly. The most notable of which is obviously 2008 Brewers legend CC Sabathia. So, best chance in a while for the Brewers to get a former Brewer into the Hall of Fame. The last one to make it was Ted Simmons back in 2020.
And he was a Veterans Committee ad.
Correct, exactly. So for a straight ad, it's the first one in a long, long time. But CC Sabathia, 21st, I believe, 25th maybe. I'm trying to remember. In pitchers war, he is the – I need to rewind a little bit here. Over 3,000 strikeouts, so that is – so I'm sorry, 55th all-time in pitchers B-war, but 18th most strikeouts in MLB history. When you talk about all the different pitchers in MLB history – that's really good. So, he's got a lot going in his favor. He is a 6-time All-Star. He won a Cy Young. He won an ALCS MVP, World Series champion. So much going for him. I don't know that he's necessarily a first ballot lock, but he's got a real good chance at it, and he should make it in at some point. When you look at him in all the against all the pitchers in history, of the 54 players with a higher WAR, pitchers WAR, than him, only 12 of them aren't in the Hall of Fame, and that's because 4 of those 12 are still pitching. So, yeah.
And another thing for him too is longevity. I mean, he played for 19 seasons. Yeah. And I think especially when it comes to pitchers, but I mean, really for any player, that kind of longevity does play well to a lot of voters. We see some guys who had great peaks, but short careers, either due to injury or whatever. that they get dinged for that when it comes to Hall of Fame balloting. Now, there are a lot of complaints about the balloting process and the process that some voters take. Like the voters who left Adrian Beltre off their ballot for some inexplicable reason this past. A couple voters that voted only for Alex Rodriguez and Manny Ramirez. It's like, really? Those two are Hall of Famers, but Adrian Beltre isn't? That just doesn't make any sense. Also on next year's ballot is going to be Ichiro. And if Ichiro isn't unanimous, whoever doesn't vote for Ichiro needs to have their vote revoked. Because there is no way on God's green earth that anyone can possibly believe that Ichiro Suzuki does not belong in the Baseball Hall of Fame. There's zero chance.
I still see videos of him, like, making, he's, 50 now, and he's making, throws from the outfield and hitting, the tiniest target at home plate. Because
he is the most insane baseball talent I think we've ever seen. He could have hit for power if he wanted to, but he didn't. He could pitch if he wanted to. Yeah. But, that was a time before Shohei Ohtani. We had two-way players, but Ichiro probably could have done both. It's insane the type of stuff that he can do, his commitment to the craft. He is a Baseball Hall of Famer in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. So if someone can convince themselves not to vote for Ichiro, they need to be convinced to give up their Hall of Fame vote altogether, because that is just absolutely ridiculous. But anyways, he should be a lock to get at least 75% in the next ballot. But Matt, we got a couple other former Brewers that are coming up next year, and they may face a tougher time even making it to a second ballot.
Yeah, I don't think any of them honestly do. But the three other former Brewers that end up being Hall of Fame eligible next year, Curtis Granderson, who he had a lot higher WAR for his career than I realized that he had, 47.2, which is super, super solid over the course of 16 years, only played for those 18 games for the Brewers in 2018. That was only one more game than Sabathia did, and Sabathia's a starting pitcher who only pitches every few games. So didn't realize that Granderson actually only played that many games, but he did get to play some playoff games. So Curtis Granderson being one, Carlos Gomez, one of my personal favorite all-time Brewers players, is technically on the ballot too. By the way, to be on the Hall of Fame ballot, you need to have played 10 seasons or more and be 5 seasons removed from your most recent season. So that's how these guys, guys like Carlos Gomez, for one. And the other technically former Brewer who's a member of the ballot, Mark Reynolds. Yep, Mark Reynolds, who played for 13 years. So, and he's over 5 years removed, so technically he's eligible, and had a whopping 6.8 WAR combined for his career.
I don't think that's going to cut it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to cut it either. For some reason, I guess I had a better memory of Mark Reynolds than I actually should have, because when I was going back over the numbers, I was like, oh, okay, Mark Reynolds, I guess, was what he was. The fact that he hit 196 with 22 homers and also had 22 homers but only 45 RBIs. That's a lot of solo shots, man.
That explains a lot of the 2014 Brewers, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Ugh, the 2014 Brewers. What a weird and disappointing.
We don't need to go back down that path again.
No.
We're just going to start yelling and screaming, and we're positive right now. We're happy.
Right.
Reese Hoskins is going to be a Brewer. A lot of reasons to be happy and positive, so we're just gonna keep that happy train on a moving. So Mark Reynolds, he's not gonna get 5%. Carlos Gomez, I don't think he's gonna get 5%. Curtis Granderson, I mean, maybe he'll get some votes, maybe he'll stay a second ballot. David Wright was able to get enough votes to stay a second ballot, but in terms of being able to build a case to get towards induction, I don't know. I don't think Granderson's going to end up getting there. It was a nice long career for him, but I don't think he's a guy who belongs in the Hall of Fame. So, no. Oh, well, the next Brewers Hall of Famer, you know, outright, because, I mean, CC Sabathia, as much as we all love him for what he did in 2008, CC Sabathia is probably not going to go into Cooperstown with a Brewers cap on his plaque. As much as I'd love to see him do that, like just to spurn the last like 10 years that he spent with the New York Yankees and what everything that he did with Cleveland, to just go in and be like, yeah, I played here for only half a season, but I want their logo on my hat, and to go in as a Brewer, that'd be fun, but I don't see it happening.
No, definitely. I think most baseball fans outside of Milwaukee think of him as a Yankee at this point, and I totally don't blame him for wearing that Yankees hat on the way in. I mean, I probably would if I were him too. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he'll wear a Cleveland hat.
It's possible. Yeah.
Yeah. He spent several years there at the beginning of his career. Mm-hmm. But it's probably not going to be a Brewers hat. I would not envision. But, you know, there is a guy that's going to be coming up on the ballots, not in 2025, but 2026. And that is going to be Ryan Braun, who will be Hall of Fame eligible for the first time that year. But, Matts, I think we know Braun's not getting in either. Because, I mean, the stats themselves are maybe fringe Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. You could maybe argue a case on his career stats alone to get in. But when you combine that with the steroids, the positive test, beating the test, bragging about or beating the case on appeal, bragging about beating it on appeal, and then getting suspended again a year or so later in the Biogenesis debacle, there is zero chance Ryan Braun gets any sort of support. Barry Bonds couldn't even get enough support to get inducted. So Ryan Braun, with his fringe statistical case plus that issue, he's not getting in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
No.
But he did get into the Brewers Walk of Fame this year, and he was the only person elected to it. And I think that's certainly a well-deserved honor. I mean, Walk of Fame, it certainly makes a lot of sense for Braun. He's going to have a ceremony. He'll come back to Milwaukee. They'll have this whole thing. They had that with Prince Fielder last year, and they'll do the same with Braun. But well-deserved honor for him getting into the Brewers Walk of Fame.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that was a surprise to anyone that Ryan Braun would have ended up getting that honor. And, of course, he does end up getting it. I mean, you look at the background, he is, you know, up in the top few and the leaderboards of so many different categories, you know, for the Brewers. He is the home run leader all time for the Brewers, was a Rookie of the Year, was an MVP, was a six-time All-Star, five-time Silver Slugger. I mean, like, the accolades go on and on and on and on. When you talk about legendary Brewers and you get past, you know, again, like those guys from 1982, you know, and back then that obviously you think of first. I mean, Ryan Braun is the next one after that. Like, Prince Fielder obviously was fantastic. Christian Yelich, his career with the Brewers isn't over yet. You can bring up a bunch of guys, but Ryan Braun was the face of the Brewers for 14 years. I mean, he was the guy for the Brewers. There's a reason they kept handing out those contracts to him and keeping him around for as long as they did. And, you know, once he got past, you know, there was the steroid thing, and he had he ended up having some injury issues and things like that. He ended up eventually coming back and kind of performing well again. And it's just, he helped keep afloat that Brewers team, even during some lean mid 2010s seasons. We always still had Ryan Braun, and he has by far, he's played in the most playoff games of any Brewer player in franchise history. And he has played in, I think it was 5 of the 9 playoff seasons ever in franchise history. So he's played in over half of the playoff series that have even existed for this franchise.
And when he retired, though, he played in, 2008, 2011, 19 and 20. Yeah, so five of the seven at the time. Only didn't play in 81 and 82, and you know, obviously they've had two postseason appearances since he retired, but still. So yeah, just an absolute key piece to those teams and the resurgence of the Brewers. He was the best player of that resurgence, and yeah, he absolutely belongs in there. And the question is going to be among Brewers fans about retiring his number next, because Walk of Fame, that's easy, putting him in there. Retiring the number is a completely different animal, and that's typically reserved for guys who are in the Hall of Fame. But as we've established, Ryan Braun ain't going to be getting there,
right,
because of a lot of, you know, external circumstances. But could they retire his number anyways? I mean, I don't really see anyone else wearing the number 8. No one has worn it since he's retired, and they, although they haven't put it up in the rafters, do you think that maybe one day they will, or do you think they'll leave it unofficially retired like they've done with Jim Gantner?
Right. I could see it going either way. I would be entirely fine, and I understand, and I'm fine that we've had this conversation before. I'm fine if you're on either side of the argument here. If you think that, you know, the things he did in the middle of his career were too unforgivable to retire his number, I totally respect that opinion. I have no issue if you think that. I just think that for what he meant to this team for so many of those years, and again, like, you know, like we were just talking about, you know, how he helped, how he was the cornerstone of the resurgence of this team, of the golden era of the Brewers franchise, really. I feel I would be good if that number got retired. I would totally be fine with that. And I think it would be deserving. If you don't feel like it is, that's okay. I hope they do. Predicting whether they do, I legitimately am 50-50 on it. I'm on the fence. I could see if they don't, because of the unofficial Hall of Fame rule, because of how, you know, Jim Gantner's kind of gone and doing it in an unofficial retired fashion. But I could see if they did, just being like, you know what, we're past that. It's the Brewers now are not the Brewers then. We can have new rules. Let's retire it. I could see it going either way.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's so tough back and forth. I think ultimately they shouldn't put it in the rafters just because of, you know, again, everything associated with it. I don't think they will, or I don't think that they should. But, you know, again, he did mean so much. No matter which way you feel, I'm not going to hate you or disagree with you for it. It's just I ultimately think they're not going to put it up there because of what's associated with it. So I think they're going to keep it just unofficially retired like they have done with Gantner. But and here's the thing, too, with Gantner. Rhys Hoskins, he wore 17 in Philly. And I'm curious what number he's going to wear, because, I mean, 17 is technically available, but the Brewers don't give it out. Josh Hader won in 17. The Brewers wouldn't give it to him. Would Rhys Hoskins be able to get it? If they wouldn't give it to Hader, I doubt they'd give it to Hoskins, especially since he's probably only going to be here for 1 year. But, you know, where does Hoskins go then with his number? But still, like, Jim Gantner, like, his number holds that much sway that even all these years later, even though he wasn't a Hall of Famer and he's never going to get into the Hall of Fame, they still will not give out his number. And Ryan Braun, it's going to end up with the same thing. They're not going to give out his number, whether they make it official or not. No one else is going to wear number 8 again.
Right. Yeah, that I will not argue with. I mean, there's no way. Ryan Braun, for what he has meant and what he did, and, you know, you could obviously they have no issue with honoring him with a Walk of Fame, like. So it's not like they're, you know, burning every single bridge of wanting to honor a guy that meant that much to the team.
No, of course not. But yeah, it's that high level, the most prestigious honor that they can give.
Right.
Is retiring the number.
Yeah. That any team can give is doing that. Mm-hmm. So I could see the unofficial retirement, that it's not in the rafters, but it's understood, and we never see anyone wear it again. But I don't know. I just feel like maybe over time, and maybe it's not anytime soon. Maybe it's a decade down the road that they decide, you know what, we'll retire the number. I don't know. But
at the same time, it also feels kind of weird to have two unofficial retired numbers, right?
Right.
Like you have all these actual retired numbers, then you have two of them that, you know, two pretty common ones in 8 and 17 that you're just refusing to give out, even though these guys weren't Hall of Fame worthy. That you know, you got to give out number, like you run out of numbers eventually, unless you're going to triple digits. So having two unofficial retired numbers also seems kind of silly.
Yeah. So what about this? What if the Brewers retire both numbers at the same time? Then it kind of takes a little bit of the hit of the whole retiring bronze number with what he did by the fact that you're doing Gantner's on the same day. Just saying. I think there's some people who would like to see Gantner's number up in the rafters. I mean, for a guy who was with it for so long, being Wisconsin, like, I mean, you're not going to give out the number anyway, so why not just freaking retire it? Like, that's one of the things with it. Like, if you're not going to give out the number, like, unofficially retiring it is kind of dumb. Like, when you think about it, like, if you're not going to put it in the rafters, then let someone friggin' wear it. Otherwise, put it in the rafters. Like, it's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. Like it makes sense. Like, unofficial retired numbers, like, it's weird enough that the Brewers have that with Gantner. And it's just like a Wisconsin thing. Like, people from, you know, fans of other teams would not understand it. It's like, why this guy, of all people, are you not giving out his number? But, you know, then not only to have that with Gantner, but then to do the same with Ryan Braun, it's just like, what are you guys doing over there? So, I mean, maybe that is, that does make the case for just putting Braun's number up there and just kind of leaving Gantner as, because Gantner's, he's the Wisconsin guy. Ryan Braun is from California. He's not a Wisconsin dude, although this was essentially his second home for all those years. But still, it's two unofficial retired numbers. Feels like a lot.
Yeah. So, but to be clear, they are retired. They're just not in the rafters. Like, that's weird.
Yeah, it is. But hey, man, that's Milwaukee. That's Wisconsin for you.
Milwaukee.
That is us.
Sometimes.
And it's a matter of loyalty too to what they did, because those guys, they stayed here for their career. I mean, Jim Gantner, obviously being from Wisconsin, but Ryan Braun, he could have left if he wanted to.
Yeah.
He chose to sign multiple extensions to stay in Milwaukee. And that's why they command the respect to not have their numbers given back out. Number 30 now is probably going to be given back out easily. Craig Counsell was on track to having his number up on the rafters, and no one would have been wearing 30 again if he had chosen to stay.
Yeah.
But now that he chose to leave, and not only leave, but leave for the Cubs, I don't think we're ever going to see Counsell and 30 hanging up in the rafters.
Yeah. Even if he had left and gone to just not the Cubs, probably still would have happened. But you go there. By the way, I forgot to mention this earlier. I think one of the even happier parts about Reese Hoskins signing here is that he didn't go to Chicago. Because there were rumors for a long time that that's where he was going to go. And I remember hearing them and being like, oh, that would be even more depressing. Is like, not only did we not get the dream fit for first base, but ended up going to Chicago after the whole Council debacle. Yeah.
And the Cubs have really kind of done nothing. No. Like, they made that trade for Michael Busch, but like, that's it. Like they haven't done much of anything at all.
Yeah. But even then, like, Mike, like, making that trade, that's no, I mean, if we're going to say that Jackson Churio is no guarantee to be awesome out the gate for the Brewers, certainly neither is Busch for the Cubs. So even that trade may not necessarily have full-on big 2024 implications. So at this point, yeah, they basically haven't done anything, which makes it even more hilarious and more awesome that we have Hoskins.
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to take him away from there and sign him, and hopefully he can haunt the Cubs for that. That would just be massive. But yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, it's been a really good week for the Brewers. They signed Hoskins, and really, I mean, Wisconsin sports in general, it's been wild. I mean, Adrian Griffin gets fired by the Bucks, and then Joe Barry gets fired. Dom Capers, Joe Barry. Really, what's the difference?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just so used to being like, fire Dom Capers. But yeah, fire Joe Barry. He got fired. That was like a wild 24-hour cycle. Griffin gets fired. Rhys Hoskins signs a few hours later. Then the next day we find out Joe Barry. And yeah, it's been a whirlwind. But the Brewers, they're not costing anyone jobs. They got someone a job.
That's right.
Bringing in Hoskins. It's wonderful.
That's right. You look at Wisconsin coaches over recent years. Craig Counsell, Paul Christ, Joe Barry, Adrian Griff, yeah. And meanwhile, Greg Gard, just
silent assassin.
Just killing
silent assassin. Silent keeps assassin. Going.
Ooh, yes. I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's been a wild time in Wisconsin sports this past week. And to make it even more wild, Christian Arroyo signed with the Brewers.
That's right. That is exact. Oh my gosh, sorry, dog came into the room.
Yeah, I see that.
All right.
Yeah, so that was a minor league signing that the Brewers made, and he's going to compete for the utility infield job. But he's got an uphill battle. There are a lot of guys competing for that utility infield spot. You've got Jamai Jones. You have Owen Miller. You have Vinny Capra. Those are just the guys on the 40-man roster. Plus, you got Yanni Hernandez. You have Christian Arroyo. And you also have Oliver Dunn. He's on the 40-man as well. So you got options there in the middle of the infield. I'm not sure how great they're all going to be, but again, they're battling for that utility infield spot. So Arroyo spent the past several years with the Boston Red Sox, was a first round pick of the Giants back in 2013, so had some talent, has really mostly been a bench option in his career, but yeah, he comes in and he adds some more depth and versatility and options for Pat Murphy.
Yeah, and that's something that the Brewers have always loved, giving themselves a lot of those options, both in the infield and the outfield. So Christian Arroyo can play pretty much all over the infield, second base, third base, shortstop. So he can cover three of those four positions. Not going to hit for a ton of power. He's got 24 whole home runs in right around 300 games. Decent batting average is around 250, but not much more than that in terms of on base. He's got an OPS under 700. So, yeah, I mean, you bring him in, you hopefully, you know, throw him into that mix. It's a minor league deal, which is good.
No such thing as a bad minor league deal.
Never. That's what I always say. No such thing as a bad minor league signing. So if he makes the team, he makes a little bit more money. If not, you've got a ton of depth down there if some injuries happen. So, hey, yeah, we'll take it.
Yeah, and that's what spring training is going to be all about. Those guys competing for those final roster spots. But the guys that are on the 40-man, Dunn and Jones and Capra, they're going to have a leg up for the spot. Owen Miller as well. So they're going to have those opportunities, and Arroyo's going to have to beat them all out. But we'll see who performs in spring training. We'll see who doesn't perform in spring training. And if not, I mean, Arroyo could still be sent down to AAA and be kept on as depth there. So hopefully we'll have more signings. Spring training is coming up sooner than you think. It is less than 3 weeks away now.
Yeah.
Less than 3 weeks from pitchers and catchers reporting. We're almost there. We have almost made it You've almost made it to spring. I know you're looking outside your window and you think spring is not even close, but down in Arizona, it is. So less than 3 weeks. We can do this. We can make it. And be sure to stay tuned to reviewingthebrew.com for all of our latest up there, latest news and analysis and opinion on that site. Be sure to follow both of us again on Twitter. I am at dgasper24. Matt, you can find him at mkematt13. That'll do it for us. Thank you for listening. This has been the Cold Brew Podcast.